Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey Tommy, it's nice to have you back. You've been out of the studio for a while, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, isn't it?
Why, thank you. Yes, I have been out road tripping and seeing America.
Yeah, where did you go and what did you drive?
The first trip I took was out to Utah in the Volkswagen Touareg, or 2004 Volkswagen SUV, and then I just got back from a four-day adventure in rural South Dakota and Wyoming in our Land Rover Defender.
No, you make it sound boring. You actually went to the Badlands and you went to Mount Rushmore.
And I went to Custer State Park and I went to Devil's Tower National Monument and I went off-roading and it was a big deal.
Before we get to that, you did have some issues along the way, so we'll talk about that. So basically we're going to be talking about what it's like to road trip in the new Defender. We're also going to be talking about the vehicles that are right now at the offices, which include what, Tommy?
We have so many. So we've got the Toyota Tacoma,
yep.
The Toyota 4Runner. Both of them are the new Trail Special Edition versions of those vehicles, which is pretty cool. And then we just seriously got probably six brand new trucks dropped off in the last hour.
All right, so let's talk about all that. We'll leave the trucks to Andre over at Talking Trucks, but let's talk about actually some truck news because, well, that podcast doesn't come out till Friday, and Ford dropped some big truck news. Do we have a little opening montage song or some kind of a logo for news?
This is the news with Tommy and Roman. There you go. There's the opening montage.
I love that. Thank you very much. But we do have big news. Ford just dropped the fact that the new electric F-150 is going to be called what?
It's called Volkswagen.
The Volkswagen.
The Volkswagen.
I would have never guessed. Well, you know, that's very ballsy of Ford.
No, it's called the Lightning, which is a very clever throwback name to the old performance truck. But, of course, lightning, electricity, very clever.
Yeah, and if you want to find out everything about that, head on over to TFL Truck. Andre is right now, as we speak, Tommy, recording a breaking news video talking about all the details that Ford has let out of the bag regarding the new F-150 EV pickup truck. You know, I'm not surprised. You know, Ford is not going to sit on their butt or on their hands waiting for Rivian, waiting for Tesla to steal this limelight. They're, you know, the number one vehicle that they build, I think, is obvious. It's the F-150. And with electrification coming, they're not going to let competitors steal the limelight.
So Ford says that the new electric truck will begin production in the spring of 2022.
Hey, let him go over to the video.
Well, it's important.
Let them go. Guys, you
they've tuned into the podcast already. We should give them some tasty, tasty news.
But there's video there, too.
Yeah, but this is a podcast.
All right. Give them some tasty, tasty news. Go for it.
This is the new hip way to consume media now, as you should know, Dad.
Talking about it, huh?
Exactly, yes. No, so over at TFLtruck.com, we've got the article, but production will begin in the spring of 2022 at the Rouge factory in Michigan.
I guess if you're in your car listening to this or you're on a hike or walking your dog, it'd be very hard to go and Google TFLtruck.com.
Exactly. That's right. People are adventuring and listening to this podcast, or maybe driving long distance over the road. It'd be cool if there were some truckers out there listening to us. Not that any of them would want to listen to me blab on, but that would be a pretty cool thing.
Now, we did break some news as well, Tommy. I was poking around in some other websites, picked up the news that we broke. Thanks to Adrian, who sent us these pictures, we got the first look at the new Mazda CX-5. And that's also a video over at TFL Cars YouTube channel or over on the website. But if you want to see, and this one you're going to have to go look at because, you know, the news is the picture, you can see what the next CX-5 is going to look like, which is very similar to the current CX-5.
It's in full camo, so it's kind of hard to see, but rumors are that it may be called the CX-30.
Yeah, me and Andre talked about that in a video.
Nope, that's a lie. CX-50, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
The 30 is already.
The 30 is already out, the CX-50. Yeah. Did you do a video about this too?
Yeah, we kind of speculated maybe they might put a straight six under the hood. You know, maybe it might be hybridized or electrified. There's a video, a TFL car, but if you want to see what it looks like, which is cool, you know, that's Mazda's most popular vehicle. And it's pretty cool. And then we can't talk about this too much, but I have to talk about it because I flew to LA for one day, Tommy, just for one day, for the brand new 2022 Volkswagen Tiguan. And I was one of the few journalists who actually got to have hands-on with it. So I was there in the studio when they unveiled it for us to show it to us. That's Volkswagen's, of course, most popular car as well. And they've done a pretty substantial refresh on it, and that embargo, by the way, in case you're wondering, is Volkswagen gives us the news ahead of time, but then they make us promise that we won't talk about it until tomorrow at 4 p.m. MST or 6 p.m. EST to give all the journalists a fair shot at bringing out the news at the same time. But not all the journalists will have hands on, Tommy.
Other news in the roundup this week.
Yes.
The 2021 Ford Explorer Timberline. So, as is the trend with pretty much every manufacturer, Ford has decided they need to ruggedize the Explorer, and that is exactly what they have done. This is actually an interesting build because it's got skid plates underneath, a special rear diff. I don't know if it's any taller, actually. It might be a little bit taller than the standard Explorer.
So is it the most off-road worthy Explorer ever?
Absolutely not. I think the old ones are better, actually, because they had like solid axles and a lot of ground clearance. But this is the most off-road worthy of the current Explorer. What do you think the ground clearance is?
Oh, that's pretty. Probably 8.5 to 9 inches.
What is, yes, but give me a more specific number. What's like the standard that Ford had to beat?
I'm going to say 8 inches.
No.
No.
What's the company that is renowned for making all-wheel drive vehicles?
With Jeep?
No. All-wheel drive vehicles with an adventure twist.
Subaru is 8.7.
So the new Explorer
is 9.
8.7.
Okay, all right.
Exactly the same. It's got steel skid plates. Andre was saying, actually, they took a lot of the Interceptor, the police version of the Explorer parts, and brought it into the Timberline to...
It's not the Interceptor.
To make it
It's called
tougher.
The Utility.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Utility.
The Interceptor would be the car. I think you actually might be right. I think they may have renamed the Utility the Interceptor because they got rid of the car.
That's what I thought.
I think you're right, yeah. It used to be the Interceptor was the sedan and the Utility was the SUV, and then they got rid of the sedan because they're only making, you know, trucks and SUVs now, so it might be the Interceptor.
It's the Ford Police Interceptor Utility.
Very good, Tommy.
That is the full name of it. But anyways, check out that website or that information on the website too. And lastly, we got a new Mercedes.
We did.
Did you know this?
We have a new Mercedes?
Our first look.
We have a GLA 250 here at the parking lot.
Nope, not that one. It's not that. No. Our first look at the T-Class.
Oh, you know, they also unveiled the, last week, they unveiled the electric one, the EQC, I think.
Oh, you're way behind.
Yeah, I know.
That was like 3 weeks ago. That was the EQS, but the EQT is the coolest looking minivan that Mercedes might build.
Okay.
It's really cool, actually. It's like Mercedes's concept of, I believe, an electric minivan. Probably unlikely that we'll see it here in the U.S., but definitely worth a look on the website. It's got some funky interior designs and kind of looks like an old school Volkswagen Eurovan.
Yeah, you know, Tommy, I'm not sure I missed it. I just have a hard time after so many years of getting excited by vehicles that we're never going to get. I always feel like, and this just keeps happening, like the Europeans get all the cool stuff, and outside of trucks and big-ass SUVs, you know, we don't get the cool stuff.
Well, we get the AMGs and we get the AMG wagon. That's pretty darn cool.
Where is the Suzuki Jimny?
Well, that's Suzuki left altogether.
Where is the Škoda Yeti or whatever the hell it's called?
Škoda has never been in the U.S.
Where is the Fiat Panda?
Yeah, I don't know where the Panda is. That's finally a good one you made there. But
you know what point. I mean? I feel like you know the Europeans get all the really cool cars, like I say, outside of trucks, you know, and even performance vehicles, right? The Europeans like seem to have a much. We get muscle cars. I'll give you that. right? But they seem to get a lot more of the newest, greatest, you know, sports cars than we ever get.
But we have the Corvette.
We do have America. The Corvette. You know, I actually was thinking about the Corvette a lot recently. You know why?
Why? Because you went out and bought some white New Balances and you're ready to move to Florida and retire?
That's the C7, not the C8.
That's okay.
The C8, as you know, is the darling of all the YouTubers, bloggers, and influencers out there.
Right.
Everybody loves it. No, I was like, you know, you like to play these mind games, right? If I had all the money in the world, would I get a Porsche 911 or would I get a Vette? And that's because, as you know, we were walking Blaze this morning and a new Porsche 911 went screaming by. It was the 911 convertible, mm-hmm. right? And we were trying to figure out how much it cost and the number. I'm guessing it had like the special exhaust, probably around 130, right, for a new 911 convertible.
That sounds about right.
And then I thought to myself, the Porsche 911 Targa, the one that we had when we were in California, was 142, even more expensive because the Targa is more, you know, it goes like coupe, convertible Targa, right, in terms of pricing. And I thought to myself, you can get a hell of a Corvette for that, and you get the Targa thrown in every Corvette for nothing. They all come as a Targa top.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the new Corvette a lot. It's an amazing piece of engineering.
Yeah.
I don't like the way it looks, actually. I think it's way too busy. I think the design is a little bit too cluttered.
It looks like a jet fighter from behind.
Yes, I agree. I think the audience is going to complain about your ice clinking.
I'm moving it over here. Don't worry.
We got to be careful. Remember, this is professional podcasting.
I have to have an iced tea because, you know, you don't want to cough.
Well, why don't you just have the tea?
Without the ice?
Yeah, just have the tea.
That's not a bad idea.
Exactly. Game changer.
But anyway, so for, let's say, $50,000 less, right, which is the cost of the Defender, which we'll be talking about soon, you can actually get a vehicle that performs just as well as a 911 and comes with a Targa at no additional cost. And it looks pretty badass. It's mid-engine at this point.
Value-wise, there's no doubt. But I still like the allure of the Porsche.
You know what? You sound like one of those European snobs. Oh, the Americans can't build a sports car. All they can do is muscle cars. They can't go around a turn. I get so sick of you Europeans out there giving us crap for, you know, I think the newest Corvette is as good as any vehicle that the Europeans produce, be it Ferrari, be it, you know, name the supercar manufacturer. And it's a bargain compared to all those vehicles, and yet the Europeans give the Corvette no respect.
No respect. I give the new Corvette all the respect in the world. It is a world-class sports car beating killer.
Yeah.
I just don't like the way it looks. I just can't get over the weird.
I saw one going down the road the other day. I thought it was a Ferrari. I was like, is that a? No, it's a Corvette.
So I saw three in my grandparents' retirement city in Florida.
Okay.
They are very interesting looking cars.
Here's the thing. The new one, it's got such a wide sill and such a low stance that anybody over the age of 70 will not be able to get out of without a cherry picker.
These guys were in their 90s. It was clear to me they were in their 90s.
How do they get in and out of it?
Well, they just live in it. I think that's just what you do now.
I mean, that sill and the ground is it's so low and so wide. I mean, you literally, you can fall into it. Like, getting into it's not a problem. It's getting out of it.
They've done a good job of really lowering the age demographic and bringing a new group of interesting customers.
Yeah, just keeping you from getting out of the thing.
Exactly. But I don't know. I don't like the transmission very much. I don't think the dual clutch is very good. I like the engine. I don't like the exhaust note as much as the C7. And I don't really fit in it very well. It's a pretty tight space. I like a 911 is built for tall Germans.
You know, it is tight. Some people have complained about the HVAC controls that kind of go down the side, right? It's kind of hard to figure out which one is the driver's and which one is the passenger's. It's very driver-centric.
Well, you'll figure that out, though, in the first week. But I think it's a little bit too tight in the cabin. I don't know. I love it. I just don't love it enough to buy it over a 911. Not that I'll ever have that kind of money.
Even at $50,000 less, you'd still get the 911. Well, I mean, that, like I said, that is a Defender almost. You can get a Corvette and a Defender.
Yeah, but if you're buying a 911, I don't think that the value is as big of a deal.
So like your typical European snob, the 911. And the Corvette has just as much, you know, lineage, just as much provenance.
So can you get an all-wheel drive Corvette?
You can't get an
There you go.
But there's a Z06 coming, and there's an electrified coming. Which
currently can't get an all-wheel drive one, and in Colorado, that's kind of a big deal.
I'll give you that. Yeah, in Colorado, you'd have to have the C4. There's no way you could do a Corvette in the winter. It would be like a go down ice, in the rain, let alone in the snow.
All right. Well, should we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. Let's talk about your you've been out of the office a lot. So let's leave the Defender for the end. But let's talk about your adventures in Moab in the Touareg. So you took the 2004 Touareg, our tough T, which wasn't so tough. We'll get into that in a second. And you took two friends and you drove to Moab and you decided to go off-roading in it. How was it as a highway car?
Well, it was very tough. It did show some electrical gremlins, but overall, it was a very tough vehicle. It was good. It was very, very comfortable. So, in case you don't know, the Volkswagen Touareg was Volkswagen's first attempt at an SUV. It debuted here in the U.S. in 2004, quickly gained a reliability standard as being a basket case. But on our trip, especially if you get one with a lot of options in the air suspension, it's so comfortable. This was like a $57,000-$58,000 car when it was new in 04, which today is a lot more than that. And full leather interior, heated front seats, heated rear seats. It has navigation that still works, 4-zone automatic climate control, so all the passengers get to choose how hot or cold they want to be. It has a very good radio, although it doesn't have an aux cord, which is a little bit of a hard thing. And it doesn't have Bluetooth because it's too old, so you have to do this little FM receiver, which was a disaster. It just doesn't work. Basically, it's this little dongle you plug into your phone that makes an FM signal that your car will pick up, but if you're anywhere near a big city, it just doesn't pick it up. But on the highway, super soft, super smooth, big V8, 4.2 liters, 310 horsepower, will cruise you up any mountain here in the Rockies at 70, 75.
But thirsty, right?
Very thirsty, yes. So these are over 5,000 pounds. And we did put a slightly larger set of tires on it than stock. I think I averaged about 14 or 15 over the course of the trip.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, ouch. Very heavy and very thirsty. But man, what a good highway cruiser. It'll sit at 70 miles an hour, you know, 2,400 RPM, cruising along all day, really quiet too. That's one of the reasons it's so heavy. It's just jam full of sound at me.
And they're bargain right now. You can get them for like 5,000 to 7,000.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Because you're going to be upside down in it almost immediately.
Yeah, so they really went crazy with some of the technology in the Touareg. So it had like keyless entry where you can just leave the key in your pocket and grab the door handle. That's stuff that even in 2021 is optional on a lot of cars. It has this feature where it'll turn on the recirc for the air conditioning automatically if it senses particulates in the air.
No, it'll turn on the recirc if you wash your wipers.
Right? That'll do that too, yeah. If you squirt your windshield wipers, it'll go to recirc so you don't have to smell.
Well, the windshield wiper fluid.
Right. A lot of really interesting ideas. And it has a navigation system. I think it's a 7 or an 8-inch screen. It still works even today, although we did find it's a CD-based navigation system. Right. And there's some highways and some, especially here in Colorado, toll roads that are more recent. And when you're on the toll roads, it thinks you're driving through a field because they weren't mapped in 04. So the navigation still works. It still knows where you are in the world. It just doesn't know the current road structure.
Yeah, so we bought ours for like just under 5,000. Now it has 130,000 miles on it. That's the one we've kept. And you did take it off-road. You took it up and over Hurrah Pass in Moab, right?
Yeah, so I did a couple different things. Yeah. We got there. We went to Arches National Park, which was a disaster, by the way, in early May, late April.
Too many people.
Just so many people. Mm. I mean, there's just no parking, and they don't stop people from coming into the park. I'm like, guys, there's nowhere for anyone to park.
It is a big park, but
not
no
that
park
big. Not
big
for
park.
That. Yeah, not as you big know, as you'd expect.
If you go to Moab, everybody goes to Arches. There's so many more beautiful places with no people. Like you can go to Dead Horse State Park. You can go to Island in the Sky.
Canyonlands.
And Canyonlands. And everybody goes to Arches, and it's just such a cliche. There's so much more to do there. But anyway, keep going to Arches. It'll keep the other places empty and available for the people in the know.
Arches,
now you're in the know.
Arches is phenomenal, though. They have some incredible hikes.
But there are arches everywhere.
There are a lot of arches, but people have found the good arches, and that's why they made the park around it. So I do think it's worth a stop. But
yeah, my favorite are the Golden Arches. They have a good breakfast.
Yeah, the Golden Arches.
It's right downtown.
Well, we went to the Wendy's, and there was seriously 25 minutes to get a burger. I don't know what the heck happened at Wendy's in Moab on that day.
All right, so you took it up and over Hurrah Pass, but things started to go wrong.
Right. So Hurrah Pass is this beautiful, scenic, basically a dirt road. It's got some rocks and some ledges in it. But a really nice path that takes you to the scenic overlook. And it's probably, I don't know, to the top is 15 miles from town. But you're pretty in the middle of nowhere. There's no service and you're in a slot canyon for a while. And it's nice. It's really nice. But we get to the top of the pass. And it's fun because there's always side-by-sides and guys in Jeeps who feel hardcore. And they're like, oh, who brought this mommy mobile up here? And then coming down Hurrah Pass, we jump in the car, start it up. And I noticed that the voltmeter had gone to zero.
That's always terrifying.
Yeah, especially in the Volkswagen because this thing uses uses more power than the entire state of Texas.
So we had the first gen ML that we were driving back from Atlanta when we bought it, and that same thing happened to us. And we managed to go about 20 minutes before all hell broke loose, and at 2 in the morning, the car died on the side of the highway about 20 miles outside of DIA, which is not a place you want to be at 2 in the morning in the country on a busy highway with no electricity.
Right.
It's a bad thing when your alternator goes.
Yeah, especially if you were, you know, out in
especially the Volkswagen one, because the Volkswagen one is water-cooled, and it's a very expensive job to replace. This is why you do not necessarily want a Touareg, because when simple things break, they're very expensive to replace.
Anyway, so I'm out. I took it so nice and slow up this dirt path to get to the top because I'm being careful, want to preserve the vehicle. I'm with my friends, didn't want it to break. But the second I saw that voltmeter go to 8 volts, I just planted the throttle, and we flew down this rutted dirt path. There was not a lot of mechanical sympathy because I thought, like, well, I want to try to at least get into cell range if this thing craps out, so I can call
someone. What happens if the alternator goes, you only have the juice that's in the battery, and with modern cars, which the Touareg is, it uses a lot of power, and so weird things start to first. It's crazy. It's kind of fun, right? Like, all of a sudden, like, weird trouble lights come on, right? Because the power is diminishing, and at some point, it diminishes to such an extent that there's not enough for the ignition, and the thing dies, and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So I was flying. I mean, I was on this gravel road. We were skidding out in the turns, and it was a lot of fun, but I was really stressed.
What were your friends saying?
They were just alarmed, I think.
Okay, yeah.
They didn't know what to think. And we had it was like 91 degrees, and we had the AC off and the radio off and everything off to, like, try to keep the battery.
Keep the battery charged as much.
So I finally make it down, back into town. The thing's still running. There's no trouble lights. It's working fine. Voltmeter's still at 8 volts. And then when I go to turn onto the main road, I put on my left turn signal, and there's no click and there's no light. I'm like, well, maybe that's the first of the power issue. So I sprint it back to the hotel, shut it off. My friends get out, go to the hotel, whatever. I get back in. I wanted to see if there was enough power to crank over the battery. And it started like normal. It went vroom, and it started right up.
By the way, that Touareg, that first gen, because it was kind of Volkswagen's moonshot, is very heavily electrified. So everything is electric. And just to change the battery, I think you need a mechanic because it's under the passenger front seat. So you have to remove the entire seat to get at the battery, which is crazy.
So it's under the driver's seat.
I thought it was under the passenger.
I think it's under the driver's seat. I've seen, you can do it yourself, but basically there's a mechanism where the whole front seat has to be pivoted forward. And then there's just enough room to remove what's basically a tank battery.
It's basically a $200 job just to replace the battery.
Well, the battery itself, I think, is like $250 bucks.
It's a special battery.
And the diesel Touareg actually had twin batteries. They had dual batteries.
The V10s.
Anything
electronic in a Touareg is like, oh my God.
So I get to the hotel and I crank it over and it starts first try and it seems normal.
Which is weird because if the alternator had actually gone, you would not be able to start it.
So I let it sit for a couple of minutes, turned it off, let it sit, started it back up, and the voltmeter is back at 14 volts and the turn signals turned back on. I did a little digging onto the forums, and I guess that's kind of like the first sign that it's not a charging issue, it's an issue with the actual instrument cluster starts to fail. And when it starts to fail, random gauges just stop working. And that just happened to be one of the random gauges that stopped working.
So it was an instrument cluster, not a thank
right.
God.
And the other thing that could happen is on the way up on some of the rocks, maybe I dislodged one of the little pins and that killed it as well. But I think it's probably starting to fail. So that was the first issue. And then that afternoon we went and did fins and things, which we've done, and there was a whole group of Jeepers, and they were laughing at my Touareg, and then they weren't laughing when they saw what it could do. It was very entertaining. It was like a group of Southern guys who were like, what you doing with your mom's car up here, kid? And then I take it up this big rock, and they're like, whoa! When we came down off of that, I got a check engine light. The car did amazing off-road. It's one of the best off-road vehicles you can buy. I mean, it's jacked up with the big tires, 13 inches of ground clearance,
center locker. When you say jack it up, it's air suspension.
Air suspension, yeah.
You push your button.
13 inches of ground clearance, center locker, rear locker. It's incredible off-road. I had the tires aired down, check engine light, ran to the store, bought a code reader, and it was like a lean occurrence on cylinder bank one, which could be something related to like a mass airflow sensor. It could be a vacuum link. Cleared the code, didn't come back. So that was the most eventful parts of my trip. But yeah, and then the third day we took it to the dunes.
Yeah, you went in the sand. There's a video up there.
Well, yeah, TFL Off-Road, we went in the sand. First time in the sand in the Volkswagen, and it killed it. It was amazing. Sand, it turns out, is all about power. You really want a lot of horsepower in the sand.
A lot of wheel speed. You want to like skim on top of it. You don't want to sink into it.
Well, 5,000 pounds is typically going to be hard to skim on top of. But yes. With the tires are down, it does a pretty good job. And high RPM stuff.
Yeah.
That one made me a little uncomfortable because the temperature always sits at 250, and now it went up to like 280 because you're at 5,000 RPM for 15 minutes straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to keep the wheel speed. And that stupid transmission upshifts every 9 seconds if you don't put it in the manual mode.
Okay, so you got to keep it in manual.
It's always like, and then it won't downshift again.
Right.
So stick it in the manual mode and it'll hold it to redline. But yeah, it was super fun. Super, super great trip. Then we had this filthy Touareg, threw all of our stuff back in, drove it home the 6.5 hours, and I felt really refreshed. Honestly, it was an amazing, even by modern standards, it's a very comfortable, refined road tripper.
You know, this weekend we were looking through Craigslist, and actually we should talk about that before we get to the Defender. Two things I want to talk about before we do that. One of them is super important. It's kind of new and used car prices. But we were looking at Craigslist, and I found a Volkswagen Touareg that somebody was selling, the same color as ours, but it was a 3-liter diesel, right? So not the first gen, but the second gen, but it had the same body style as ours. And you said that there's a period there where Volkswagen basically updated the powertrain but kept the same body style as ours, right?
Well, so what they did is in 2007.
Because the problem is, if you go to the full second generation, you lose the low range, at which point it becomes, you know, a highway car.
Right. So the way it works is you call them, there's like internal codes T1, T2, and T3. So we have a T1, a 2004.
Right.
And those were 2004 through 2007.
Yep.
And then in 2008, they updated the style. Yep. So they gave it more Passat-like headlights, gave it a little bit better tech, but it's the same car. So it still has the low range, and it's still based on the first-gen Cayenne. Porsche did the same thing.
Right.
So remember they had the really ugly Cayenne?
Yeah, I know.
And then they made it slightly less ugly before they completely redid it.
Right.
So then in 2011, they went to the
Porsche Cayenne and the Touareg
same
are sister car. Yeah, yeah. Same, they share a platform.
In 2007 or 2011, they went to the T3 Touareg, which was all new. They lost the low range, and they made it much more reliable.
So maybe if you want that T2 one, you still get all of the goodies, right? You still get the low range.
Right, and you can still get the lockers.
And you get the air suspension, and you can get the 6-cylinder diesel, which, you know, is a Dieselgate one. But a lot of them have been now retrofitted by Volkswagen to actually be, you know, legal.
And it's you really got to do your research because
You really want the one that hasn't been retrofitted.
Yeah, really.
Seriously.
The T1 Touareg had the V10 diesel. Do you remember that?
Right, yeah.
And I think that was like...
Those were like 10K to 15K. People really want those. The problem is they're crazy expensive to maintain.
And the way that worked, it was like 04, 05. Mm-hmm. And then guess what happened? They got in trouble with emissions, even in like 04, 05.
Yeah.
So they killed off the V10 for a few years. And they brought it back for one more year, I think, in 08.
Yep.
But in the T2 Touareg, they also had a 3-liter TDI V6. The V10 was a disaster.
Which was a Dieselgate.
The V10 TDI was amazing. It was impressive, but it had a lot of reliability issues. Like, it needs turbos on a regular basis. And anything is an engine out job on a V10 Touareg. But the V6 TDI was much better in terms of reliability. Lower power, but much better in terms of reliability. And then those came in the T3s, remember? Like 2012, we reviewed one on the next gen. And those were definitely Dieselgate. That was like peak Dieselgate, because Porsche also had them as well.
Anyway, the nice thing about those first-gen 3-liter diesels is they've got tons of torque, which is good for off-roading, and they're not as crazy complicated as the V10, and they still have the low range and all the off-road goodies, which by the T3 Volkswagen lost, right? It just became more of a highway cruiser and less of an off-roader.
Yeah, so like look for like an 09 TDI would be like a good one.
Right,
those ones are rare though with the air suspension.
So before we talk about new and used car prices, because I think this is also important, let's talk about TFL bids. We are selling, we just did a series to hell and back, no payment needed, where we are selling some really cool old pickup trucks. We went and bought 3 cheap trucks under $10,000. Then we took them to the mechanic. We had them fix everything. Then we upgraded them with our friends from realtruck.com. They helped us make them more off-road worthy so we could take them to Moab. And now we just aired that first episode over at TFL Truck on the weekend, and now we're selling the Chevy. Right now, last time I checked, we're selling it today. It's on TFL Bids.
May 10th, it's going to be sold.
Today. Yeah, that's today.
Well, what if they're listening to the podcast tomorrow?
Right. Anyway, if you're listening to it tomorrow, it's probably sold. Right now, I think it's at $4,600. I think the reserve is $5,000, but we're going to sell it. We just want to get it out of here so we can get some other things. But the reason I bring that up is we're also selling our 2020 Ford Raptor with only 6,000 miles. So if you want a really good Ford Raptor that has every option, that's on there. And more importantly, we actually now also have a TRX, which are, you know, super hard to find. So there's both a Ford Raptor and a TRX on TFL Bids that's selling the week of the 10th through the 17th. So if you're listening to it this week, if you want yourself a TRX or a Raptor that we've owned, that we've only put 6,000 miles on, that, you know, is pristine, under factory warranty, they're both brand new, head on over there, check it out. There's also an FJ cruiser, so if you want an FJ, those are hard to find, that's up there now. So the site is actually starting to take off. We, over the last 3 weeks, we sold a bunch of Jeeps. We specialize in doing trucks and off-roaders. It's really starting to actually, you know, get some life to it, so check it out. But the reason I bring that up is because I want to talk about what's happening with new and used cars. And it's kind of crazy right now. We've had the perfect storm, and I hate that analogy because it's way overused. But basically what's happened is you've had the pandemic, then you had a fire at one of the manufacturers that produces the chips that do things like run the computers in cars and trucks. And then you had all of a sudden everybody not buying new things and the economy coming back and people wanting new things. And all that has led to the fact that manufacturers just don't have enough inventory. And so it's really hard right now to get new cars and trucks at anything resembling a discount. It's also hard to get anything that's, you know, a base model because the manufacturers have figured out that it's much more profitable to take the chips that they have and put it in the high-end models, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you're looking at a truck, you're looking, you're not looking at XL, XLTs. You're looking at, you know, if you're the Ford buyer, you're looking at the King Ranch version or the Platinums. And the last quarter, because of this, even though the manufacturers sold less vehicles, I think, they actually made incredible profits. Because they figured out that, well, with the chip shortage, they can sell and not rebate and not discount any of their vehicles. So I guess that's good for the manufacturers. I don't think it's good for the consumers because it means that new cars and trucks are hard to find. And because of that situation, the used vehicles have also come way up, way up.
Yeah, I mean, it's
like 25, the studies I've read, it's anywhere from 25 to 30% in the last several months for used vehicles.
It's very good time to sell a used car, but a very bad time to buy one.
Yeah, so if you want to sell, this is the time to do it. If you want to buy a new one, you're going to have to, you know, probably spend full sticker. No more, you know, I was talking to a sales manager at a Mazda store about this. I asked him, I said, you know, what's your inventory? And he said, usually they have between 100 and 150 cars on the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have 50.
Oh my gosh!
And I said, well, what happens if somebody comes in and they want, let's say a Mazda, you know, CX-5, and they want to go bargain? He said, we just let them walk.
Ah!
He said it's either full sticker or even like 5 to 10% above sticker, or you can, you know, we're not. He wasn't like, we're not mean about it, but we're like, we're not selling it to you at anything, you know, under sticker. So it is full sticker, or, you know, go someplace else and good luck finding it.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. And, you know, I don't see the situation changing in the next. I also talked to another manager at another store, and he felt that the situation might rectify itself in the next quarter to two quarters. But the question in my mind, and I think all of our minds, is now that the manufacturers have figured out that they don't need to swamp the market with an extensive and inexhaustible list of cars and trucks that they can make more money by creating scarcity. Is that the new model going forward in America? Because that's the way it is in Europe in a lot of places.
Well, I mean, it's different though, because in a lot of ways, the car manufacturer's customer is the dealer, right? So wouldn't they want to sell as many to the dealer as possible?
Yeah, but the dealer also makes more money. Both dealers and manufacturers are making more money because they're not discounting them.
Doesn't the manufacturer sell the car to a dealer at a fixed price? I mean, I don't think that the markup applies on the manufacturer
then
either.
A lot of the rebates and discounts that are out there are through the manufacturer. So like loyalty cash, all that stuff comes from the manufacturer, not from the dealer.
Gotcha.
So dealers don't have to discount their cars, and manufacturers don't have to rebate or apply incentives. That just means there's a lot more money on the table for both the dealer and for the manufacturer.
I would imagine that I hope it's not a sustainable thing. I hope that we start to see more inventory.
Well, the reason you saw so much more inventory and so much more competitiveness is because car manufacturers and dealers were all about conquests, right? So they were like, hey, you have, pick the vehicle of your choice. Come on over here and get the, you know, Jeep instead. And that's a conquest buy if you're going from a Ford to a Jeep, right?
Right.
And so they were all like trying to conquest each other, which created this internal loop where, you know, everybody's trying to pull customers away from everybody else. And the best way to do that is to lower prices and to offer discount and rebates and yada, yada, yada. But now they're figuring out with scarcity that they don't have to do that. They don't care because people have to come to them. So if you need a new vehicle and there's only a few cars on the lot, it's no longer like, hey, you know, there's 14, 15 different cars in the midsize crossover segment. It's not about which one I want. It's about which one I can get.
Hmm.
So we'll see. I hope not. I mean, you know, America had, I think, some of the most highly optioned and some of the least expensive cars in the world. And maybe that's going to change. All right. Enough of kind of what's happening in the new and used car market. So tell me about the Defender trip. Now, we've had a long and interesting history with the Defender. I don't want to go into it. But we have learned some lessons, and we're going to give you those because you drove it how many miles, Tommy?
It was 1,366 over 4 days.
Or about 2,000 kilometers for all you Europeans out there. That's a lot of miles.
Is that how many kilometers it is?
Yeah, you can do the math.
I am not that fast in my head.
Multiply 1,300 by 1.6.
Yeah, you're right. 2,198 kilometers.
Yeah, yeah. And so, we started out with the four-cylinder. And by the way, our four-cylinder died after 168 miles. I would not recommend that in a Defender. Let's say that you have the perfect four-cylinder. It's a little four-cylinder turbo, right, that puts out 300 horsepower. It's just a big three-row vehicle that tows over almost 8,000 pounds. I just think that little four-cylinder is not powerful enough. Even if it doesn't break, right, let's say it's perfect, and I still think we ended up with the straight six, much better engine, mild hybrid, 400 horsepower, and it feels like, you know, this vehicle needs it. Of course, now there's a new V8 coming.
I think the four cylinder is plenty power.
I think that is not
the issue with the four cylinder. 300 horsepower, Dad. It's like,
yeah, it's a big, heavy vehicle.
A Suburban in 1989 had like 140.
Well, hold on. All right, let me ask you this then. Yeah. I get that. We're not in 1940.
Well, 1989, they still had the same speed limits.
What's the speed limit up there where you were at in South Dakota?
It's like 80 in a lot of places.
And how was it doing at 80?
It's fine.
Yeah?
Plenty of power.
How about if you wanted to go a little bit quicker? There was probably
You'd be breaking the law.
But if you wanted to, there's probably not a lot of power left after you're driving this big monster.
There was a lot of power left. I mean, I was just, you could. The thing is, you get so greedy now in 2021. Cars have gotten so quick.
Look here.
As long as they'll do the speed limit or a little over for passing, how quick do you need to go?
It's not about quickness. It's about like ease and about reliability. So
reliability is another story. I agree.
I'd rather have a big engine that is, you know, comfortable in the car than a little engine that is squeezed to within a millimeter of its, you know, tolerance so that it can put out 300 horsepower so that it can power a very heavy big vehicle. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you exactly nailed the issue. The issue with the four-cylinder is not the 300. 300 horsepower is a ton of power. The issue is the fact that it's a little itty-bitty. I think it's a 2-liter that's being squeezed within an inch of its life to make 300 horsepower through turbocharging and crazy new tech. So that's the issue. But the power is not the issue with the four-cylinder. It's the fact that I think longevity-wise, it's a really high-strung little engine in a big lumpy SUV. So I think that's why I would get the 6. The power...
A hybrid electric supercharged.
Well, I know. That's also crazy complicated.
But it's still cool.
It's a very good engine. Yeah, so the 3-liter is probably one of the best engines I think you can buy in any new SUV.
So let's take a step back. So, JLR, Jaguar Land Rover, right? And mm-hmm. the old straight six, actually the old V6, right, that they had in the Jaguar and the Land Rover was actually a V8 where they just didn't use the last two cylinders.
Right. So they had like the 5-liter V8, and then they plopped out two of the cylinders for... a 3-liter V6, and that was supercharged, was the old
V6. Yeah, and when I say they didn't use it, I don't mean they like shortened the block. I mean they left it as a V8.
Yeah, they left it as a V8 block.
And they put balancing shafts in the last two cylinders, so it was still the weight and size of a V8, except that the last two cylinders weren't actually firing. So now they redesigned it. They did a straight six, right?
Right.
And it's a much better engine. It's a much smoother engine. And how was it, you know, on those long highway and non-highway rides?
It was very good.
Yeah?
Very good road tripper. So basically, the trip was we left Boulder, Colorado here on Thursday, and then we drove up through Wyoming on the eastern side of Wyoming and then crossed into South Dakota. We went to Custer State Park. We saw Sylvan Lake and the Needles Drive, which is incredible. And then we went to Mount Rushmore. We did some off-roading.
Smaller than you think it is, isn't it?
Smaller than you think it is, yeah, but beautiful. We went off-roading in the Black Hills. Then we zipped over east into South Dakota for the Badlands National Park. And then we went back west again to check out the caves. There's a big national park out there as well, the Wind Caves.
Okay.
And then we went up northeast into Wyoming.
And is there a video coming?
There is. Yeah, we went to Sturgis.
Oh, nice.
Went northeast into the Wyoming state border to visit Devil's Tower. So, but it's cool out there. I've never been out there, and it's very unusual to the road trips I've been, where you like go on an interstate and you're just on an interstate for hours and hours.
And they're dead straight.
And then you exit to get lunch, and you're on the interstate for dead hours. When you go into that part of the country, it's a lot of two-lane roads with fast speed limits.
Yep.
Or what I found is if you take the slower recommended route in Google Maps, and a lot of dirt roads. So I probably spent like 80 miles just cruising around on dirt roads in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing for miles and miles and miles, just beautiful scenic rolling hills and trees, and it was one of the most beautiful places I've been.
Let's talk about the vehicle. So good power.
Excellent power, yeah. So on the two-lane roads, you do encounter a lot of trucks or campers.
Good passing power.
Yeah, so you can pass pretty much anything whenever you'd like. A fuel economy is good. I was impressed with the fuel economy.
How much?
This thing is kind of a whale. Yeah. It's a huge vehicle.
It's a three-row SUV.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like a Land Cruiser.
Yeah, it's like a Land Cruiser.
2021.
Wow, that's really good. Is good.
There's a caveat.
Okay, what's that?
Premium fuel.
Oh, recommended or like?
It's like recommended.
Like in the TRX, it's you have to do it.
Yeah, it's recommended, but I wouldn't put anything else in there.
Well, and you're gonna have that. Yeah, I agree.
You've got a turbocharged, supercharged hybrid. Yeah, run the fuel they recommend in there.
Yeah.
So gas prices, I was hitting like $3.50.
How much to fill up?
60 some from a quarter tank, and
which
you don't.
For Europeans would be cheap, but for Americans, it's a lot.
And I found out there, you really don't want to go much below a quarter because it can be
miles
between gas stations.
How about like the interior seating, steering, braking? How was all
yes.
that?
So air suspension is standard on the 110s here in the States.
Yes.
The four doors.
Right.
A very comfortable ride, extremely plush. A little bit too plush above 80.
Oh, it gets a little floaty?
It gets a little too floaty. I'm really surprised
that they... So that's like at above 130K.
I'm really surprised that they don't like bring it on down and like firm up the spring.
You think, like what car does that? There's a bunch of cars with air suspension that kind of squat down.
Pretty much everything does that.
And this one doesn't do it?
Well, maybe it does, but it needs to do it more.
Okay.
So like the Touareg, you can dial in sport mode on air struts, and then it like firms them up.
That sound is me, you know, emptying out the air suspension and having the car. Just thought you should know if you're listening to this.
Okay, so above 80, a little floaty, and it gets pretty wallowy. So if you're passing in a turn at like 75, 80, the whole thing kind of goes,
whoa. Was this on-road mode? Because there's different modes.
Yeah, but there's no sport mode.
Okay.
So you got on-road and eco. Right. Well, you're not going to put rock crawl mode at 85 miles an hour.
No, you're not.
So that's one of the downsides with the air suspension.
Wind noise?
Very good. The upside with the air suspension
Dad,
you're killing me here.
I know, but it's important. Unless you get the snorkel. I've heard the snorkel
makes
a lot of
noise. Well, we'll talk about, but that's a whole other subject.
All right,
we'll talk about
snorkel.
That in a second.
All right, go for it. You were saying about the suspension.
Yes. So very good on road. And then when you take it off road, which I did, you can just jack it up. And you can tackle rocks, but Land Rover uses a dual bag system where they have one bag for height and one bag for kind of the damping. I don't know if that works very well. It's supposed to mean that in the off-road settings, it's still nice and soft and compliant. I don't find that to be the case. I find it to be pretty hard in the high off-road settings.
So our experience has been that like the best vehicle we ever had. Look, I don't care about capability as much as I care about comfort off-road, right? So I suppose I'd love like a Star Wars land skimmer where you're actually floating. But anyway, the most compliant, most comfortable vehicle we ever had was that LR3. But that may have been because the suspension was shot.
It could have been. I don't know. I don't suspect that was all the story because I recall the LR4, which is a similar system, had a very, very soft ride.
All right, so you would jack this thing up and lower it when you got back onto dirt road, and when you got into some rocks, you'd jack it up and lower it. What ended up happening when you did that?
We end up overheating the air suspension system. So I don't know if it's the compressor or if it's the airlines, but something gets too hot and it shows you a warning. It says, no, you can't keep doing this. you can continue to drive with caution. So then at that point, you're like, well, better, might as well just leave it in the high height because I don't know if I will need it later on and be in the standard height. So I'll stick it in high, and then it's really hard. And we did this off-road trail. It was probably 26 miles round trip. It was supposed to be 13 miles of just bumps and rocks and pretty miserableness. And then we get to the end, and there's a locked gate, which we didn't know about. So then we had to turn around and go back the other way. So going back to what you said, the quietness is very good. It's got one of the best, most comfortable cabins for long-distance cruising and really, really quiet. The only issue with the cabin is the infotainment screen is not very good.
No, the infotainment screen is too small. And how about the charging screen, the charger for your phone? It kind of rests in this weird position. The phone is not horizontal, not vertical. It's horizontal, so it's kind of the long way between the driver and passenger. And then it sticks underneath basically half of the middle of the armrest, so you can look down, kind of see it that it's being charged right remotely,
yep.
But you can't see the whole phone.
Right.
Which is bad if you're trying to use it to navigate.
And what we did is my friend had her phone hooked up for music and entertainment, and then my phone was the one we were using for navigation.
Okay.
But she was going through Apple CarPlay. We didn't want to necessarily use her nav because it would keep interrupting or whatever. So we used the nav on my phone, but then I needed to keep it charged, so I use a wireless charger. But it's underneath the armrest, so you can't easily access it and see what the route is.
Yeah.
When you're stopping to navigate, which is a bad thing.
How about the Land Rover's navigation?
It didn't work.
It was
useless.
Like there's like no roads that are mapped.
No, they're all mapped. But the search function. I plugged in my cabin address exactly to the cabin we were staying at. It said it didn't exist at all. Google and Apple both found it within the first 5 seconds of the search. I plugged in like Wind Caves SD, and it tried to take me to someplace in Maryland or something.
Yeah, that's why I don't get about like factory navigation systems. I mean, the upside is they're always powered, so you're not like draining your phone battery, but the downside is they suck.
They're just not good.
Yeah.
So the infotainment screen's not very good. The radio is incredible.
Okay.
Very good radio. And the best part is the seating position. So Land Rover's known for something called the command seating position.
Where you sit kind of on top of the vehicle instead of in it.
Yeah, you can. The seats are typically set very high in a Land Rover. Now the Defender, the default seating position is pretty low. But it's got so much headroom, you can actually, this is the only vehicle I'll jack the seat up in, raise it up, so you can sit up high and see the world.
To be fair, ours doesn't have the big panoramic sunroof, which gives you probably an inch more headroom, which is why we wanted it.
Right.
But it does have the little Alpine lights.
Well, we got it. It's a long story why we didn't get the sunroof, because that's what was available. But but you can jack it up and see the whole world. The seats are good only if you get the optional lumbar support, which is stupid.
Yeah, you and I both have a bad back.
Right.
And when we bought that, this is actually, if you want to know the secret, I'll give you the secret, Tommy. The reason that I did not want to get another base Defender, so the original one we got was like everything you need, nothing you don't. So it had steel wheels, and we'll talk about that in a second, because wheels are also important. And it had, the only option it had was a lockable rear diff and the off-road package. And unbeknownst to me, when we ordered it, it had manual seats with no lumbar support, which made the thing almost, I have a really bad back, and without lumbar support, I just can't do it.
You can get the base one with lumbar, though. It's an option. You have to pay extra for it, but we did not.
Yeah, which is crazy. Come on, manufacturers. Really? Like, there's some things that are just like, come on, lumbar support. And Porsche did the same thing. Speaking of, you know.
No, same thing.
The base 911 does not have lumbar support. Come on, guys. Whoever is counting beans at these companies, I would take them in the back and I would give them a piece of my mind. Or better yet, I would whip them with spaghetti for, you know, not putting lumbar support in a $50,000 car. Or in the case, actually $54,000 in the case of a Land Rover. Or get this, $99,000 in the case of Porsche. If I'm shaming you, Porsche, I'll stop my rant in a second. More power to me, because I'm sorry, at $99,000, a Porsche without lumbar support or a Land Rover without lumbar support is just effing silly. And, you know, I know people out there are thinking, well, you know, if you're buying a Porsche, if you're buying a Land Rover, then you should expect them to upcharge you on all these conveniences. But lumbar support is not a convenience. It is a necessary and important part of a vehicle. It is, in fact, so important that I would not buy a Land Rover without it. End of story. Same thing with a Porsche.
Yeah, but a lot of people, I think, don't care. Honestly, I think a lot of people hate lumbar support in the first place. Most people think, like, what's this thing poking me in the back? So we may be kind of unique in that opinion.
You know, that's fine when you're 22, but I think the people who are buying these are more my age. And by the time you've been my age, you know, like me, I've broken my collarbone. I've taken a bunch of tumbles doing a bunch of stupid stuff or doing a bunch of, like, sporty stuff. And so my back, you know, in my case, I rolled an M3 into a tree, which completely hosed up my back. And so at this point, it becomes a necessity. And yeah, so fine. If you're 18 or 15 or 12 and your back is fine, who gives a rat's ass about lumbar support? But when you've got enough money to buy 911, you're going to care about it.
Oh, the crack is terrible, by the way, in the Defender.
The crack?
The crack.
What crack?
The space between the void.
The little void where, like, your phone and your french fries fall.
The void between the seat and the center armrest.
Yeah.
Remember the drop stop was invented for that?
Yeah.
So the center armrest on the Land Rover is tapered at the edges, and everything rolls into the crack. What'd you drop in there?
Everything.
Literally everything.
How many french fries am I going to find in there?
Probably $900 worth of quarters in that crack right now. I probably dropped my phone in that crack like 100 times.
Apparently there's a ketchup packet shortage right now.
Yeah, so they're all in the Land Rover. That's where they all went, is into that crack.
How about the material? How's the material? It's kind of this kind of funky, like almost neoprene-like. How was that to sit on for hours on end?
So the interior is beautiful. Yeah. Really a nice design. I love the dashboard design with the kind of the flow-through center console.
Yep.
Have you seen the seat in that Land Rover?
No.
The driver's seat? It is gross. This, like, clothy neoprene material It does an amazing job of capturing all the bits of grime and
dog fur
that's on the back of
your
seat.
Ours is like a camel color.
I actually haven't, like, spent time to look at it, and the camel does a good job of kind of hiding it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how we're going to clean it. I mean, it's going to have to be steam clean or something. Like, that bolster,
yeah.
Like, it's just blue. It's turning, like, black and blue.
Like, from your jeans, right?
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. And if you go to an auto show, check out the bolster seating on this kind of funky, clothy neoprene material. It does not seem to wear very well.
So, maybe, to be fair, okay, like, our Tesla Model Y is, like, white vegan leather.
But that's basically rubber. That's like you can just wipe it off.
And you take some Windex to that and it just wipes right off.
But part of the bolster's cloth, and I don't think that's going to wipe off.
Maybe with the Defender it'll do the same.
With the cloth? You think you can wipe dirt out of cloth?
Well, you get to figure it out because you got to clean it out.
I know. I got to clean it out.
And let's talk about the wheels. So the first one we had the Steelies, right? Which are 18s, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are these?
20s.
Yeah, and almost too big, right? For like especially when you're on that kind of washboardy dirt road for hours on end.
Yeah, I mean, so we have for some reason ours is it's a weird spec. It has the off-road tires on it,
which you said weren't actually very good.
Well, I think they're like a Wrangler rugged terrain kind of tire.
They're like halfway to a proper all-terrain.
They're pretty good off-road actually,
right.
And they're really quiet on the road.
Right.
They're not good in the rain. We hit some pretty torrential rain in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And they're not very good on gravel. So they're good on rocks and kind of like a trail.
Yeah.
But on gravel, they're super loose. They don't do a very good job biting into the gravel. The big issue I found is I went through a little bit of mud on our off-road trail. There's like this little hill you had to climb up, this little dip.
Yep.
And it happened to have like 4 inches of water mud in it, which is nothing. And I went through it. The wheels got kind of coated on the outside and it looked really cool and rugged. We were driving to Wall, South Dakota on the interstate, no problem. Get into Wall, pull off the highway, start cruising down these little back roads at maybe 15, 20.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the scene from...
Psycho.
Yeah. That like creak, creak, creak. It was the worst. I mean, people in this little town were coming out of their houses to figure out what happened.
Yeah, I'm looking at this like pentastar kind of design in the wheel.
It's maybe, a five-spoke wheel.
Maybe those holes are too big and too much like dirt and rocks get into the brake caliper.
And somehow, yeah, some kind of mud had worked its way into the brake caliper. And it was the most horrific noise I'd ever heard. I mean, I felt bad driving it even to the little car wash. It was that loud. So I get to the car wash and I'm like squirting my little butt off trying to get this mud out. And I did get it out. But I noticed that the wheels do a very good job of letting mud in and caking the inside of the wheel in the mud. So I think an 18, you know, would have been better because you got more sidewall. You're further away from the actual mud itself. And the holes are smaller. They don't let as much debris in.
So I've been listening to a lot of like European podcasts to kind of figure out what their take on it is.
Mm-hmm.
One of them I listened to is a guy, Seen Through Glass.
You know,
he's kind of this British dude
uh-huh.
with his kind of, you know, car dealer buddy. And it's fun. He just had the 90, right? Which is the new two-door
version, yep.
And he said, well, it looks sexy. He loved it, but he could not live with it. He said, basically, he said like a two-door sports car. So he was complaining about the fact that the doors are heavy and that the back seat is all but useless because you can't get into it. But there is a point that he made, which is true, and that is in the back, and I know we're talking about now utility, so you could put the seats down, and the back of the seat is covered in this kind of plastic,
uh-huh.
like diamond, fake diamond plate.
It's great, yes.
Which is great, but the problem is it doesn't completely flat. It kind of lays at a little bit of an angle.
Uh-huh.
So whatever you put on top of it,
rolls
including
around.
The dog, goes rolling into the back.
Yes, into the trunk.
Yeah, and it's funny because they don't do that in like the Discovery. The Discovery is completely flat. So he was saying basically with the 90, while it looks cool, like there's no room in the back and you can't get anything in there because anything that you put in there kind of rolls backward. And then if you put the seat is kind of at that inverted triangle so that there is no room once that rear seat is up on the 90.
Interesting.
Whereas this one, of course, there's tons of room because there's a full third row in the back.
The rubber floors are great, though, because you can just kind of rinse them out.
The rubber floors are great.
Really good rubber floor. They love the rubber floors. So it's a huge vehicle with a lot of utility. But it's got the worst view blocker of any car I think I've seen.
View blocker. Oh, blocker. What blocks the view?
In the trunk, you know, where you typically have those little pull-out little... it's like typically made out of rubber, or it's like a parcel shelf that comes down, so you block the view.
Yep.
In the Defender, it's this cloth thing that
clips
in place. And it's like impossible to take in and out, and it just ruins the trunk space. Just I would get rid of it completely and use a massive trunk.
It was one of the top five things I hated in the recent TikTok video.
But you just like you can't put stuff underneath it. There's not enough room underneath it.
Yeah, the normal ones kind of...
They're retractable. They're like retracting
this,
themselves.
This thing is supposed to be like either flat or up.
It's supposed to look cool, but it doesn't work.
Either way, it doesn't look cool. The other thing that I found when I drove it up to the mountains a couple weeks ago, I felt that the cruise control was really fussy and hard to engage and not easy to figure out on the steering wheel. I was really having a hard time just engaging it.
Yes.
Like the difference between, you know, the proximity to distance part and where you set the speed limit is really fussy.
Well, the weird thing, so 1,366 miles later, I still don't fully understand it.
Exactly. It's very confusing.
What I have figured out, which is very counterintuitive, so you're driving along, you have your foot on the gas, and you're holding 74 miles an hour.
Yep.
When you go to set it,
normally you just put set, and that's where it would
be. Well, hang on, hold up. You go and press set,
yep.
And it doesn't say it's set.
Right.
So what you have to do is take your foot off the gas, then you can set it, and it will display the speed you set it at.
That's crazy.
Won't set while you have your foot currently on the throttle.
So that was the thing.
So I think that's what the issue is, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard, though, because you need to keep your foot on the throttle to maintain the speed you're trying to set your cruise control at. But it's just very counterintuitive.
I literally spent like 20 miles trying to figure out how to set it, Tommy, and I didn't figure that out. All of a sudden, it just somehow engaged, and I was like, finally, it engaged. And then once it was set, you could resume it. So then it was set. But getting it to set. And then the other thing I found was that it kind of ping-pongs when you're using. Did you find that too?
With what?
The steering, when you're using the...
Well, that's because you're using it wrong.
Okay.
you should not be relying on it.
I was testing it. I wanted to see how...
Well, it's not lane centering. It's not supposed to keep... It's an emergency thing where if you start to veer out of your lane, it'll push you back in.
Well, then that's very confusing because like in most cars now, most cars have a form of lane centering, right?
It's lane departure mitigation, but it isn't lane centering like autopilot where it'll keep you in the middle. Yeah, most cars do now have some
right,
kind of lane
and center. So this is a brand new car, so I just assumed it had that. You know, let's face it, Tommy. The technology... Okay, it's drive-by-wire steering, right? So the technology to do lane mitigation or lane centering is just software.
It's the same, yeah.
It's the same. So why does this not have lane centering versus lane, you know, where it tries? I mean, they're trying to do the same thing. One, you're saying if you start to veer out of your lane, it will correct and put you back in the lane.
Right.
Whereas the other one is it'll try to keep you in the middle of the lane, which is kind of the same thing.
Well, very different.
Oh, for God's sake.
Marketing
BS.
The one that keeps you in the center of the lane is meant to be like a level 2 system where you can rely on it to drive you down the road.
It's just software.
I know, but you can't use the Land Rover system to drive. If you use a Land Rover system to drive down the road, people will think you're on some kind of hard
ping pong.
Yeah, it just goes left and right.
And you know how I know it's just software? Because in the Tesla, you can pay $10,000 and upgrade to full self-driving, which isn't full self-driving, from autopilot, which isn't autopilot. But you know, you're not adding any hardware to the vehicle. You're just using the existing hardware, and all you're doing is, you know, using a software upgrade to make it do that.
Yep. Yeah. But I think overall, it was probably the best road tripper I've been in. I was very impressed with the quietness, the refinement. Pretty impressed with the fuel economy. Very good radio. You know, there was a few niggles. Well, like we talked about, yeah. like the wireless charger is pretty annoying. The Void is pretty annoying. It doesn't do well if you've got more than one audio device Bluetooth.
I think, you know, we don't usually pay for satellite subscriptions because we only keep the cars for a very short amount of time. So it doesn't, you know, that's a whole nother scam. God help you if you sign up for XM and you auto renew it, which is what they make you do. Because the pricing for XM can be anywhere from like $9 a month to $240 a month. And depending on, you know, how hard you argue and talk, then you can, you know, negotiate in different plans. And they have all kinds of different plans. It's just a really, purposefully, in my opinion, confusing subscription service meant to keep you locked into a service at the highest possible price for as long as possible. I find that to be very, in my opinion, once again, not very consumer friendly. So I have very little love for XM. I love the content they put up there, but the company itself, I think, has a monopoly. And once again, like any other company with a monopoly, they're abusing it. And consumers aren't getting the very best. Because, like I said, I've paid anywhere from, you know, $9 a month to $249 for the exact same service. And then I had a hell of a time getting them to actually stop basically billing my credit card. And then I'll be darned if every time you don't call, you get, you know, you get Jimmy with an Indian accent who has a hard time either understanding what I'm saying or has such a bad phone line that it's like, you know, connecting to somebody on Mars. It's just, you know, for as much money as you end up paying for this service, the amount of customer service that you get is minimal.
All right, we didn't use XM at all. We just went with Spotify.
We don't have it. We stopped. Ran out.
That's because we're young and trendy.
Well, why not just use Pandora?
Pandora? Pandora's for 90-year-olds. Who uses Pandora anymore? Spotify is where it's at, or Apple Music.
Why not just use Spotify?
Well, that's what we did.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I agree. I like XM Radio. I do actually listen to it a lot. And I do listen to Pandora a lot because I'm 90.
But some manufacturers give it to you for like 3 months. Some give it to you for 6 months.
Some for a year.
I think Jeep does a year, right? And I'm going to say Land Rover, for whatever reason, does 3 months.
3 months, I think. Yeah. So the other thing I was worried about, one last thing on my trip, glass chips. I was really worried about getting a chip because it's got the heated windshield and it's got the lane keep and all the sensors. Turns out I just looked it up on Safelite, which is an auto glass place. It's $1,039 if you wanted a new windshield.
Because it's got those little...
It's got the little heating elements in the glass.
By the way, I'd love to get your... You know, that might be a story worth covering in terms of what do you guys think about... XM and the subscriptions. What has your experience been? Am I way off base, or have you had similar experiences with it? Let me know in the comments below. And if we get enough feedback, we'll actually do, this podcast is kind of like two guys talking, but we'll actually do a real story about it and, you know, do some real consumer news versus just me hand-boning and giving you my opinion. That windshield is crazy expensive, but the question is, does it work in the winter, Tommy?
I don't know.
We really never drove, you know, we did have some bad snowstorms, but I don't think we ever took it out in a really bad snowstorm where the windshield got coated and frozen, snowy, slurry, kind of icy stuff.
I did take it out in a few snowstorms, but where it would be really handy is in the morning when you wake up to kind of clear the windshield. In the past, I think they work pretty darn well. People hate them, though, because you have the little heating elements in it. Yeah. And you can't see them. Like, if you pay attention to them, they're definitely there all the time.
It depends on how you focus your eyes.
Yeah, I just see past them. They're not an issue for me. Overall, I really would recommend the Defender. No mechanical or reliability issues other than some, you know, slowness with the info screen.
What ends up happening here in Colorado? Because we have a lot of rocks, so we have a lot of windshield cracks, right? So people end up replacing that windshield with the regular one without the little lines, because the difference
is much cheaper.
$1,000 versus a couple $100.
We did that with our Discovery.
Yeah, and so those end up being the factory one, but then by the time it gets sold and is used, it tends to just have a regular windshield. How about the headlights? How were the headlights?
Very good. Yeah. We have the nicer of the two headlights, so there's a couple different headlight options, but the headlights are very good. Honestly, they're so good, there's really no difference between the brights and the low beams, so I just leave the
lights. Do they steer? Are they?
I don't think they steer. I didn't notice them steering. No, okay. But does have fog lights in the front and the back.
How about recovery hooks?
He doesn't have one in the back.
Yeah.
Although now it's different in 21. It used to be you could only get the ones on the X.
Right. There is one in the front. It's hidden under a little plastic cover.
Yeah, and then we have the towing package, so we just put a recovery D-ring hitch shackle in the back if we needed to pull it out from the back. But overall, I've blown away with how it was as a road trip vehicle. I don't like the size in the city. Like, when I'm driving around town, I'm just like, oh, why is this thing so big? When we're on the road trip, you feel really safe and secure, and you can just carry so much stuff that it's a nice thing to have.
So I kind of feel like, you know, when we're doing these reviews, I have to point out the negative, because I think people actually enjoy me, hopefully. Maybe I'm wrong doing my rants. If you don't enjoy it, or if you do, let me know in the comments below. We do read our comments. This is, like I say, potentially our third one, but I do love the vehicle. It's one of those vehicles that just speaks to my soul and my heart, and my brain. It's both functional in terms of on-road and off-road, and emotionally I connect with it because I think it's a very good-looking vehicle. It makes me really happy every time I get behind the steering wheel. At the end of the day, you know, that's what it's all about. Some vehicles, I get behind the steering wheel and I can't wait to get, you know, into another vehicle. This is one of my favorite vehicles to drive that we have at the office. And, you know, people say, well, you've had some, you know, pretty bad experiences with it, but I still love it. And maybe I'm a fanboy at that point, Tommy. I don't know.
Yes, that's correct.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Maybe I'm being a fanboy.
I love it as a road tripper. I think it's an excellent long-distance vehicle. I still think it should be a Discovery and not a Defender. Off-road.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd buy a Defender. That's the other question I have. Why would you buy a Discovery instead of a Defender?
There's no reason to buy a Discovery, other than if you like the looks, but I wouldn't really strongly recommend not buying a Discovery over Defender. I think it's a great vehicle. I think it was the best road trip vehicle I have. I still wish, you know, Defender name.
You think it's cannibalizing the sales of the Discovery?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
You think it is?
I'd be surprised if they sell any Discoveries anymore.
When we drive to the airport, which our trips are starting to happen again, every time I drive by the Land Rover dealership, which is actually on the way to the highway, I look and I always see almost no Defenders, and yet you see a lot of Discos and you see a lot of
the same, a lot of the same Discos too.
Yeah.
I wish, like, you know, from the enthusiast standpoint, it's incredible off road, but it's just a little too big and expensive and a little bit too fancy to really be, in my opinion, a true regular off-road vehicle, which is what the Defender always was, in my opinion. So I wish they had done like a more stripped-down convertible version. But it's an amazing, if you want a family hauler that'll seriously do a lot of off-road and is incredible on long journeys, then yeah, the Defender, I think, is a great choice. And this one, the 3-liter, we've got 4,500 miles on it now or something. No problems to report. Granted, not a lot of mileage, but a lot more than the first one. And it's been perfect.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're going to hold on to it. We usually keep these for about a year so that we can do a full 1 year, you know. And I think especially this one, it's important that we hold on to because of our experience
with
it.
Maybe we need to get more miles on it.
Yeah, so get some more miles on it and let you know what it's like. You know, honestly, I'm curious to see what happens when the new Bronco comes around. Hopefully, we'll get our hands on one of those to compare to it. So, you know, the video I'm dying to make, of course, is 4Runner versus Defender versus Wrangler versus Bronco.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be fun.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening and for watching. As always, what's our new slogan that we're testing this morning?
I don't remember.
God, now I forgot, too.
Not a great slogan, apparently.
No, hold on.
Start your day with...
Start your day the TFL way.
There you go.
We get a lot of comments, people saying that they love to, drink coffee and watch our videos. So every day, you know, on one of our 7 YouTube channels, we have at least one video. So tell me, what? Start your day...
With
the
coffee.
TFL way. No, not with coffee. The TFL way.
All right. We'll see you next time.
See you guys next time. Thanks for watching and listening. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.